Hello, I'm Caleb Howard, and this is Tales from Sacred Texts. The world is built on stories. From the beginning of time, humans have immersed themselves in legends and myth. When God himself wanted to explain to us what he was like, he didn't push elaborate treatises, but instead told stories about humanity. In this podcast, I tackle the concept of religion through stories and legends. Told through a 21st century lens, I explain to religious and non-religious people alike the stories that lie at the very heart of the belief that maybe there is a God, and maybe he really is good. We're on part two of The Holy War, an allegory by the famous Christian author, John Bunyan. If you didn't listen to the previous episode, you really need to go back and listen to it before you start on this one. We're picking up right in the middle of the story without any context, so this is one of the few times on my podcast where having heard the previous episode is absolutely essential. One quick content warning before we get going. There are brief mentions of a method people use to take their own life. It's not graphic, and we find that the people don't plan to take their own lives, but it's there. We're returning to the city of Mansoul 40 years after we left, and really not a lot has changed, besides the fact that we've created a slew of human-demon hybrids that are super evil and also blend in very well with the natives of Mansoul. If you couldn't imagine, that's about to become a real thorn in the flesh. Our return to the Holy War universe takes us directly to the throne room of God, and my biggest question is how it took us so long to get there. God is sitting in his throne room 40 years after Diabolical's hostile takeover of Mansoul, and he's just now finding out what went down. That's very hard for me to accept. Granted, it was also very hard for God to accept. His favorite city had been overthrown 40 years ago, and he was just now hearing about it? Did the angels of heaven communicate? At all? Angry and determined, God stood up and made a resolution. He swore before the angels and all heaven that he would defeat the demon and take back the city. Not only would he save the people from the demon's grasp, but he would build the place back, far better than it had been before the demon's takeover. He then sent messengers out throughout the universe, publishing God's plan to go to war. The divine generals gathered from the four winds and clustered around God. They were eager and ready. John Bunyan leaned over and whispered in my ear, artist to artist. People from the 21st century will want to hear the names of every single one of these generals, their sigils, the strength of their armies, and the detailed contents of the secret message God sent to them, right? Right? I shook my head. Probably not my podcast audience, to be honest. John Bunyan shrugged. People from the 17th century were going to eat that stuff up, so I was just going to have to deal with reading through all of it. John Bunyan, in his typical style, then matter-of-factly explains that it was only logical that Diabolical wasn't happy to hear about the plan to kill him. He then explains the chief demon's anxiety response, which is too similar to mine for comfort. Diabolical began to really overthink, overexplain, and draw up massive treatises. He created multi-step plans to make the townspeople more evil in hopes of discouraging God from attacking at all. He passed out super evil demon armor to every single townsperson that wanted to resist God, and he made everyone sign a contract with death and an agreement with hell. But despite his show of outward bravado, Diabolical was terrified. When Diabolical had entered the city, the god magic making the place impregnable had broken, and for all the demon magic Diabolical had, he feared that he could not fight off tens of thousands of God's own soldiers. He resolved to do his best, though. He began by inspiring the townspeople with demonic lust and hatred. He encouraged them to do whatever evil and crazy thing came into their minds, making them significantly more erratic than they'd already become. Diabolical also began to strictly police flow of information within the town, making sure that the only news that the townspeople heard was his own fake news misinformation. For a while, the townspeople shared Diabolical's determination to fight, but as they began to see the strength and discipline of the armies of God himself, they began to despair. When the townspeople began to talk of surrender, Diabolical warned them that once the soldiers of God got into the city, they'd torture every single citizen to death. Men, women, and children. The citizens nearly lost their minds. They screamed in desperation, stampeding through the town in terror. They begged their demon ruler for help. If Diabolical would just give them weapons, they'd go out bravely. Better to die in battle than experience brutal torture. Diabolical smiled because he had them exactly where he wanted them. He knew that the armies of God would welcome them with open arms, but they didn't know that. Diabolical came out of his very fortified castle at the center of Mansoul and personally shook each of their hands. He admired their bravery. He was on their side. He would stand by them until the bitter end. If they were tortured, it would be over his dead body. The townspeople, feeling supported by their ruler, rallied and seized Diabolical's horrible armor. Together, they would fight God to the death, and maybe they would win. But what the people of the town didn't know was that Diabolical's secondary goal, if he couldn't defeat God, was to get as many townspeople killed in battle as possible. Every person who died was a person that God could not rehabilitate. Diabolical's brainwashing campaign ramped up as God's generals began to surround the city and will was at its heart. Diabolical's most loyal servant was always next to him, spreading propaganda throughout the city and standing on the walls, screaming insults and threats at God. While some of the townspeople still had a few doubts about Diabolical, they followed Will unquestioningly. They applauded the bravery of one of their own. Will's defiance inspired the entire town more than Diabolical ever could. The generals of God tried everything. They blew trumpets and made speeches trying to convince the people to abandon Diabolical. But Will just stood on the wall, making faces, ridiculing the generals, quipping insults back at them in defiance. For every word the generals spoke, attempting to show the people just what kind of individual Diabolical was, Will spoke bold, rebellious words that filled the townspeople with pride. The captains promised the people forgiveness if they surrendered. Will retorted that that was just a ploy to get inside the gates without loss of life. Surely the generals planned to torture them all brutally once Diabolical was no longer around to shield them. Speaking of Diabolical, did the generals not fear him? Oh, they should. They really should. Diabolical was a gentle, kind man, one who could have sallied forth from the city and decimated their armies, but yet he just wanted peace. Though this was untrue, Diabolical was shaking in his metaphorical boots, Will truly believed it, and his confidence convinced the townspeople it was true. God's generals knew that Diabolical was winning the propaganda war. It was time to step it up a notch. One of the chief generals, Boanerges, was going up to the gate to argue with Will and Diabolical himself. He stepped up to Eargate, which Bunyan makes clear is where people went if they wanted to talk. Wait. Boanerges was the name that Jesus gave to two of his disciples, brothers, and it more or less meant trigger-happy. These brothers wanted to burn down an entire city because the inhabitants didn't like Jesus, and Jesus was so not cool with that. He gave the brothers the nickname Boanerges, which translates to Sons of Thunder, is a bit of a joke, but also as a reminder to take it easy sometimes. So was that really the best name for God's number one general? Boanerges shrugged. They were going to burn down this entire city if the people continued to cling to the demons. He addressed the townspeople. Did they know what kind of guys demons were? Yeah, they'd been living with them for 40 years, but demons were tricky, and they played the long con. Everything with demons caught up in it always ended in suffering. Suffering? Will roared with derision. This dude, Boanerges, would clearly say whatever he needed to say to get inside the city. Did he think the people of Mansoul were that stupid? God's propaganda wasn't going to convince them to throw open the gates to the torturers. The people of the city clapped, cheered, and shrieked. Will had completely outwitted and outtalked the armies of God. Put that on a YouTube compilation of Christians getting owned. The generals had had enough. Will and the demons had everyone caught in a chokehold of propaganda. There was no more hope in dialogue. The generals determined to march on the city and take it, but they had to pick a chant first. What was the most Christian-sounding chant that they could scream as they broke through the gates and killed demons? "We're just going to yell, 'Ye must be born again!' over and over and over," the general said. "With that kind of chant, taking the city will be super easy." We'll skip through the 3 days of continuous yelling as the generals of God continued to advance. They definitely had at least some good magic on their side because they were continually dodging bullets but were never once hit. One of God's soldiers killed 6 demons with one shot, and it certainly seemed like the city would fall at any moment. But those first 3 days were about as good as it got for the armies of God. The city began to recover its strength. Will even led a party of raiders out of the city, taking 3 of God's captains prisoner, and those captains immediately switched sides and gave the demons confidential information on God's battle plans. Progress slowed to a standstill. A lot of the demons died, sure, but there were a lot more demons where they came from. One of God's soldiers was delighted when he fired an arrow straight at Will's heart, but Will dodged it at the very last second. And though the gates of the city were no longer protected by divine magic, they were much stronger than God's generals could have possibly imagined. Day after day, God's armies kept hammering away at the gate, but to no avail. The one area that God's armies did make progress in was the propaganda war. The sentiment inside the city was slowly shifting towards God. God's soldiers were still killing demons and townspeople left and right, and cannonballs would smash a random building from time to time. The townspeople lived in terror and stress. When the battle dragged out weeks, then months, they began to criticize Diabolical. He had talked a big talk, but he couldn't drive away God's armies. Some of the bravest people began to run throughout the city, praising God's captains and wishing that they were under God's leadership again. Sensing the turn in public opinion, Conscience and the mayor, who had long been confined to their homes, now began to come out of their houses and insult Diabolical, and there were some angry words thrown around. At one point, those words broke out into actual violence, and many people took Conscience and the mayor's side on behalf of God. Just as many showed up to stand up for their demonic lords, and there was a massive brawl in the street. Conscience ended up beating a demon to death. While Conscience did get locked up for this, and Diabolical announced that he would be executed once the invading armies had been defeated, his actions emboldened more and more people within the city to start speaking out on God's behalf. Sadly, words were about all the help that God got from the people of the town. Noticing the increasing support for God, Will began a propaganda campaign, convincing the people who supported the demons to double down. And as for the people who praised God, maybe God's rule hadn't been that bad. Then. But now, God wouldn't have any mercy on them for supporting his sworn enemy. They could say nice things about God all they wanted, but they would be brutally tortured if he won, and did they want that? The people who supported God began to quiet down, and some of them even changed sides. We'll find out what goes down in Mansoul as the city continues to resist God's soldiers, but that will be right after this. Nearly a year had passed. Diabolical was becoming more hopeful that he could hold out indefinitely. He stood on the wall, his demonic face curled into a grin. He began to boast louder and act more confidently. His proud smile encouraged the people of the city to continue in their rebellion. But everything changed one morning when Diabolical heard loud cheering. He looked over the wall and saw thousands of God's soldiers marching in perfect array like the elves in Lord of the Rings. 5 generals, each leading thousands of men, their armor glittering in the morning sunlight. But the worst moment for Diabolical was when he looked out and saw a face that he recognized. God himself was on the scene. It was then that Diabolical knew that the jig was up. While he sent many of his demons to the wall to hold off God as long as possible, he told the others to go through the town, killing and mutilating anybody that they could get their hands on, from the children to the elderly. The demons were no longer here to deceive, but to destroy. For the first time, the city experienced their full wrath. Yet, even now, the people dared not throw open their gates to the armies of God. Will's propaganda stuck deep within their minds, and while they realized just how foolish it had been to serve the demons, they feared the tortures God had prepared for them. The days were bleak, and the nights were lonely. There was not an ounce of hope for them, and they fell to the ground in despair. God with us, man's soul is one, was the chant, and so it was. Mere days after God had arrived on the scene, the gates shattered with heavenly magic, and the glittering armies of God himself marched into the city in victory. Diabolical fled to the fortified castle, but even it could not stand up to the power of God. Diabolical was captured and marched out of the city naked in his true demonic form, bound in chains and humiliated. The soldiers of God cheered with joy to see the malicious demon under God's power. But for the inhabitants of the city, all was doom and gloom. They trusted Diabolical. Even those who had had their doubts still believed him to be powerful. But when they saw the man who they'd followed for years, naked, powerless, weak, and groveling before God, they felt an unbearable emptiness within themselves. Even those who had yelled praises of God in the streets from time to time had never taken any action on God's behalf. They'd talked the talk, but in the end, they'd remain loyal to the demon out of fear. But now, he was cowering, and they were the only ones left, at the mercy of God. And from what they believed, God had no mercy at all. Everyone hid in corners, hovels, and wherever they thought they wouldn't be seen. They feared the moment when God would come for them. Meanwhile, the soldiers of God mostly ignored the humans, only killing the demons and hybrids. But there was one human they were hunting. Will. Will skulked and hid, running from place to place under cover of night and eating scraps. He feared being caught. He had been the ringleader of it all. And he was beginning to regret it. It wasn't the consequences that he regretted. He knew he deserved whatever he got. He began to deeply and truly regret the side that he had picked. He'd used his influence to open the city to the demons, and now he knew deep within his bones that every bit of suffering that the city had felt was on him, and him alone. The screams of the women and children that had been brutally tortured by Diabolical's demons still haunted him. It had been his fault. All his fault. When Will was finally captured, he went quietly, muttering to himself, "Whatever happened to him now, he deserved it." Meanwhile, some of the other humans got together, writing petitions to God. The petitions begged, in obsequious language, for mercy. They were content with being enslaved, whatever. Honestly, it was the Middle Ages, and hoping for a quick death was optimistic at best. But perhaps God would read one of the petitions and have some kind of mercy on them. When the messengers reached God with the petitions, they all fainted. They were overwhelmed by his glory and frankly scared to death. They knew that they had worshipped a demon for years, given in to every evil desire, and spat in the metaphorical face of God. While they began to realize some truths about God, Diabolical's lies had crept deep into their souls, and they viewed God as good, but merciless. So intolerant of evil that he would be intolerant of them. Though they sent petitions, they braced themselves for the torture they knew was coming. They did consider that perhaps sending the petitions to God would anger him further, but figuring that they were already probably going to get tortured to death, how much worse could it get? They did, however, forbid a man named Gooddeed from going to carry a petition, because supposing that God asked the man's name, he might be insulted that the people thought that there was any good left in Mansoul. The people of Mansoul hated themselves for choosing the demon all those years ago. The third petition was carried by a motley crew. Desires awake, a noose around his own neck, shambled to the tent where God himself sat enthroned. Wet Eyes, his friend, carried the petition as he sobbed, tears dripping on the paper. They fell on their faces before God and wailed. He hated them, didn't he? God didn't dignify that question with an answer. He spoke, as it were, past them. Bring the prisoners. Will walked out, along with some of the other influential men of the city. Will wore a noose around his neck as well. Unlike the others, Will was ready to die. He could not stop reliving the horrors that Diabolical had put their city through in the final days, and he knew that that was all on him. If he died, at least his pain would all be over. God stood before Will and cross-examined him. He had surrendered the city to Diabolical, hadn't he? Will nodded. He'd become his right-hand man? Will nodded again. He'd allowed Diabolical to corrupt him? Will answered this one with a no. He'd chosen corruption. He wanted to rebel against the established order. He wanted to serve the demons. He'd known who Diabolical was, deep down. He couldn't even claim to be deceived. He had rebelled of his own free will, and he deserved to die. They all deserved to die. He'd brought the noose to save God the trouble of procuring one. He wept. God could take his life, but would he have mercy on the city? God himself stood to his feet, stretching out his hands toward Will. His voice was loud and strong. He was making an official proclamation, and Will listened for the death sentence. What he heard was far different. Chills went down his spine. I hereby forgive all sins, trespasses, and iniquities done by the town of Mansoul that have ever been committed against me. God walked up to the prisoners, to Desires Awake, and to Wet Eyes. He embraced them. All was forgiven. The evil that they had done would be forgotten forever. For now, he was just worried about their well-being. Surely they hadn't been well taken care of by the demons. God waved his arm, and their chains shattered into pieces and fell to the ground. He asked them what they wanted. He had delicious food, comfortable clothes, and jewelry. Did they want some jewelry? God himself opened a box full of flashing gold, sapphires, rubies, and amethysts. They could take as much as they wanted. Will lost his balance and fainted, but God caught him and hugged him. All would be made right. I know what you're made of. I know you're weak, but my strength is perfect in weakness. God touched Will, and he felt strength and determination return to him. The townspeople had expected God to torture the prisoners to death in front of them and then start on everyone else. They had been shaking with terror. They could not believe their eyes at first. They blinked quickly, trying to clear their vision. It was all so strange. They did not understand anything about God. He had surprised all of them. They waited for the other shoe to drop, but it didn't. The word began to pass around, whispered at first. God's ways were beyond human understanding. The people were on edge at first, but then they began to try to accept God's mysterious forgiveness. They fell down and began to sing and dance at his amazing love. The day had dawned black and hopeless, but the sun went down upon overwhelming joy. God provided the city with the finest clothing and jewelry, the best food, and his love. The people cried out, God is worthy, worthy, worthy to receive glory and honor and power. God had shown them unbelievable love, and they were overwhelmed. They were taken aback, and they bowed before him. Before, God had been their ruler by right. Now, he was their ruler by choice. They wouldn't have anyone else. They cried as they saw his love. They wept in shame that they had for so long accepted the miserable rule of a tyrannical demon when they could have had the never-ending, unsurpassed love of God. As the sun went down, the people shouted their joy. They would wake up to this again tomorrow. The night was not to be feared, because the next morning their overwhelming joy would continue. More of this at the rising of the sun. More of this tomorrow, were the last words as darkness settled over the city. The townspeople begged to have the honor of housing just one of God's lowliest soldiers. Any service they could do for God could not even begin to repay what he'd done for them. Meanwhile, there was none more devoted in his service to God than Will. Those who have been forgiven the most love the most, and Will knew just how much he'd been forgiven. Will knew that many of the demons had escaped the initial assault and hid in cracks and crevices, ready to burst out and cause suffering as soon as they thought they could get away with it. Perhaps it was also the PTSD that came with the suffering he'd seen, but Will tirelessly roved through the streets, hunting down demons at all hours of the day and night. His time spent as Diabolical's right-hand man was invaluable, and he knew where every single lair was, even the ones that God's soldiers could not find. Will tore through the streets, sword in hand, cutting down demons, slashing fiends, and chasing hellhounds, who ran from him in terror. This is where I really wish I was a fanfiction writer. I want to do an entire novel on Will's Devil May Cry phase. A bright line hero, traumatized but grateful, accepting his struggle with PTSD and feeling that he must fight so others don't have to. Burdened by guilt and still struggling to accept God's unfailing love in his own life. I want to write the story of Will. Sadly, though, it wasn't just the leftover demons that Will would have to face. Somehow, Diabolical had managed to escape. He traveled through salt fields, through deserts, and through dark places, weary, tired, and blistered, but driven onward by hate until he came to the very gates of hell. There, he met new, powerful allies and began to brainstorm a plan to once again take back Mansoul and wreak deadly vengeance on those who had opposed him. Diabolical returns to exact brutal vengeance on Mansoul, but that won't be next time. Season 3 has been going on for a long time, and it's been tremendous fun, but all good things must come to an end. Next time, we'll return to David for a two-part season finale, and we'll tell an emotional, painful, heart-rending story about what happens when our heroes aren't the people we thought they were. I know I've spent a lot of time joking about Bunyan's storytelling, but it's no joke. The tedium is unreal. I've drafted this episode no less than 4 times, and each time nearly completely scrapped the draft. I've read through the first half of the book, the treatises, the lists of sigils, and the names of all the, quote, bad brats, and it's just been tough. But once I've cut through the clutter of the old-timey writing, I've realized just how well the Holy War hits its mark. John Bunyan reached across 4 centuries and through my lack of reading comprehension to touch my heart. The book goes into great detail about just how bad Mansoul gets. There was no way of fitting all that information into 2 podcast episodes, but I did my best. Sometimes the detail seemed over the top and goonish, but I realized later that Bunyan was just setting the stage to show how remarkable God's forgiveness truly is. We're so bad at recognizing his forgiveness. I won't spoil this story because I plan to tell it soon, but shortly before his death, Jesus is visiting Simon, a member of the religious ruling class. Simon's a man who sexually abused a teenage girl, led her into prostitution, hired her for her services, and when they were caught, blamed her for everything and attempted to have her executed. Simon, a well-respected leader, invites Jesus and his disciples to his mansion and wines and dines them, gloating about his morality. That teenage girl, whom Jesus rescued from execution, slips quietly into the home and bathes Jesus' body with expensive perfume. Simon snaps out that she's a prostitute, and Jesus is shaming himself by associating with her. Jesus stands up. Shaming himself? He's not ashamed of one single human. Jesus reminds Simon that the person who is forgiven most loves most. The person who has been forgiven little loves little. Jesus looks at him pointingly, as if to say, "I know what you've done." Simon looks away in shame, because he knows that he's the one who has the most to be forgiven. He knows that he owes Jesus so much more, but instead he walks sorrowfully away. He's not willing to accept that he needs forgiven. He's not willing to confess that though he is a well-known religious leader, he knows nothing about God. Instead, he decides to continue playing the status game, unwilling to confess his shortcomings and potentially endanger his earthly position. He does not accept God's forgiveness. That's the way many of us act. We go through church, through life, and through our interactions with others. Though we praise God and say all the buzzwords, we act like we've done nothing wrong. We don't realize the extent of our rebellion against God or the way we've betrayed our duty to support and strengthen other humans. We may be outwardly religious, but we get angry when we see people living and loving the way God asks. To us, the gospel is just a cultural ritual or fire insurance. The Holy War paints a picture of just how much each and every one of us have wronged God by rebelling against him, and how much pain has resulted from our actions. It paints the picture of what we deserved until God wiped our wrongdoings away with his own blood and gave us beauty, love, and the power to become better. Those who have been forgiven much love much. If we don't love Jesus that much, have we forgotten how much we've been forgiven? The power of this story is in its clear picture of God's love. Many people de-emphasize God's love, thinking that Christian teaching has no value in it if it doesn't induce fear in the listener. But the demons tremble before God, and yet they don't obey. The only thing that can break us out of our rebellious, sinful stupor is God's love. Outside of God's kingdom, you have to earn love, and you fear that at any moment, you might make a mistake and lose everything. God came into the world with a new and radical proposition. God says that you deserve love, kindness and care just for existing. Such a love wakes up our deadened, jaded souls and galvanizes us. It gives us something to fight for. Will had regrets before he met God, but he had no strength to fight. He wasn't on God's side, he was just regretting his involvement with the demons. He already feared God's punishment. He acknowledged that God was in the right, but he had no strength to change his life. God's love and forgiveness were what changed things. They galvanized him. They gave him self-worth, purpose, and the drive to fight. God's love drove Will to take a stand firmly on the side of God. Likewise, Christianity begins with God's love. Our fight against evil begins with God's love. There is no substitute. That's all for this week. I'm going to go into some housekeeping matters before I close off the episode. I talked briefly about the end of season 3 earlier, but I'll go in more depth here. This upcoming year is going to bring some significant changes in my life, so unfortunately, Tales from Sacred Text will be taking a brief hiatus. I'll release a trailer with more particulars in the next few months, but the tentative date for my return with season 4 will be September 1st. Our theme will be earth-shattering, and we'll take a close look on how Jesus and the early church brought about a radical shift in the culture, a shift based on a new way to live in love. We'll examine what we can do in our daily lives to reject the mindset of those who crucified Jesus and instead embrace his life-changing teachings that, and I quote, turn the world upside down. Thank you so much for listening. My podcast has grown so much this season, and part of it has been because you've shared it with your friends. Your support has motivated me to go out and learn audio editing, spend a lot more time per episode, and increase the story quality. Please keep doing what you've been doing. Have a great weekend, and please come back soon for the last two episodes of Season 3. Credits to myself, Caleb Howard, for script writing, storytelling, and opening theme music. Credits to Evoke Music for the closing theme. Credits to Evoke Music, Pixabay, YouTube, and Breaking Copyright for the background music. And to every musician who releases open source music for up-and-coming artists such as myself, thank you from the very bottom of my heart.